Argument this morning is Windy City Metal against CIT Technology Financing. Mr. Novoselsky.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. Since I've been in front of this court many times, I know the court has read the materials, and rather than go into a recitation of the facts, if I can address what I believe are the issues. This is a case that's somewhat of an anomaly. There is really no dispute that the fact that CIT is being sued by the FTC for fraud and conspiracy, the bankruptcy trustee for Norvergence, pursuing various leasing companies, including this company. Judge Anderson believed that the complaint didn't have enough facts to reach what he believed was a heightened need. Now, granted, this is before Twombly, which changes the standard somewhat to, I think, about probability. But in looking at the complaint, it's difficult to understand, short of having evidence from within the boardroom. And I would point out that we requested discovery, we requested discovery of the Attorney General, who had many of the documents. Judge Anderson said no. We issued a subpoena, incidentally. The Attorney General objected, claiming privilege. It's a little difficult to understand in light of the current argument that the Attorney General somehow represents all of the people of the state of Illinois. But be that as it may, the issue before the court is, does the complaint state a cause of action? Whether it's respectfully, if we're in the Illinois courts where they require more facts, they're a fact-leading jurisdiction, of course, and not notice. I went through last night and tabbed, in fact, I ran out of red tabs as to the allegations of fact. The only thing, frankly, the complaint is missing is the names of individuals within CIT or Reed Smith and others who actually did certain things, things which you would normally get during discovery. Very respectfully, I think Judge Anderson, with, again, very respectfully to him, believe that we were supposed to have every single possible fact about the fraud and the conduct of these companies before we file the complaint, which, frankly, it's not, I realize a complaint isn't simply a fishing expedition, but that presupposes that one has discovery before one files a lawsuit. If we look at this under what, and I apologize, I can't remember the name of the case from this court about the smell test. You have a company that is being pursued throughout the United States, a company which, incidentally, during this, we moved to stay a supposed class action settlement out of the New Jersey court, where CIT was going to settle, presumably, with our clients for the very fraud that is alleged here, which Judge Anderson said hasn't been alleged. So it's, if we look at this, if we commit common sense, if we may, and I apologize for asking that to be done, why does this complaint not state a cause of action where the purpose of a complaint, according to all the courts, is to simply notify your opponent and give them a fair basis to respond? This is not a motion for summary judgment. This was not a motion to, if you will, dismiss based on facts outside the complaint. It's simply, this complaint isn't specific enough. Why? Well, it isn't. Turning to the Reed Smith issue, and this court took with the case our request to certify two questions here. During the course of the litigation in the state courts, the law firm that represented CIT caused a settlement proposal to go directly to our clients and other class members. No notice was given to the attorneys this was being done. Had this document been executed without the plaintiff given advice of counsel, it would have undercut, would have been a release, it would have ended the case. In state court, we raised the objection that it was a violation not simply of the disciplinary rules, but that it was being used under what Illinois law recognizes in the Thornwood versus Jenner and Block case against a law firm there as aiding and abetting the commission of a fraud. Reed Smith's position has always been, well, the settlement we negotiated with the Illinois Attorney General required us to give notice directly to your clients. First of all, I'd respectfully submit that the Nuremberg defense that somebody told us to violate not simply ethical rules, but those rules are designed to prevent an abuse of a client where an attorney or somebody acting at the request of an attorney asks them to perform something without advising their attorney so he can advise them what to do. That is not a defense, and I'd point out that that provision was negotiated by these attorneys themselves. They asked the Attorney General, as part of the negotiated settlement, to require them, supposedly require them, to give notice directly to the plaintiffs, supposedly going around their lawyers. I don't know if the court wants to deal with it or certify that question. The other question we asked to certify was whether the Attorney General has the power to negotiate supposedly on behalf of the people. Now, the Attorney General of the state of Illinois is clearly the chief legal officer of that state. But the Attorney General here purported to represent the interests of private individuals, negotiate a settlement without knowledge to them, which required these individuals to pay money in a situation where the record reflects the same office of the Attorney General through another agency had these contracts declared void ab initio, a position, incidentally, that the FTC, in pending litigation before the district here in the Northern District, is also taking, that these contracts are void ab initio. If the contracts are, in fact, void ab initio, the leasing companies who are being pursued right now by the FTC have indeed committed a fraud. But again, none of this can be pursued here because Judge Anderson said, you haven't stated a cause of action. And if the court has no questions, I believe the issues are fairly framed by the briefs. I believe that the plaintiffs should be given the right to file their third amended complaint, which I believe fleshes out even more than it was necessary in any of these complaints, and attaches copies of various documents showing the conduct. And by the way, these documents and records, the bankruptcy trustee for Norvergence has documents which apparently the trustee believes is sufficient to pursue a fraud action against these same defendants to recover assets for the bankrupt estate. So for these reasons, we respectfully request that we be given the opportunity simply to pursue this case. I thank the court for its attention. I'll reserve my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Ryan.
May it please the court, counsel, good morning. My name is Edward Ryan. I'm representing CIT here today. In light of counsel's arguments this morning, I'll just address a couple of points that he made. One, that there's a trustee and bankruptcy complaint which names CIT among 32 other financing companies. That's all there is. There's just simply the complaint in the case. The Judge Anderson's opinion, a 13-page opinion, went through painstakingly to show how the allegations made regarding CIT were insufficient. Counsel asked what else can be asked here. Well, the court was simply asking that Rule 9B be followed. Since fraud is being alleged, state the allegations with some particularity. Here, there not only aren't allegations pled with particularity regarding a fraud by CIT, there are no allegations of any fraudulent conduct by CIT, not one single allegation of a misrepresentation by CIT, not one allegation of a contact by CIT with any of the plaintiffs. And in fact, whether there is any contact, any communication of a fraudulent nature is obviously within the unique knowledge of the plaintiffs here. And, Your Honor, since nothing else was touched on, I think that CIT will simply rely on its briefs unless the court has some arguments. Questions?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Ryan. Mr. Kruka.
Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Michael Trucco. I represent Reed Smith. Mr. Novoselsky put the question to the court as to why does the revised second amended complaint not state a cause of action. There are two claims essentially against Reed Smith, the fifth and the eighth count. The fifth is premised on the Thornwood opinion, and I would direct the court to paragraphs 123 and 125 of that revised second amended complaint, and that is the entirety of the allegation against Reed Smith as it relates to that fifth count, Your Honors. And in those paragraphs of the complaint, there is nothing there that even remotely comes close to the Thornwood standard. The idea behind the Thornwood case that aiding and abetting liability can be imposed on a lawyer in Illinois is not novel, but based on the facts of that case, the circumstance of that case, and the pleadings in that case where that claim was allowed to stand are diametrically opposed to what's here. And all that is here is that Reed Smith knew that the Attorney General had initiated cases against Norvergence and that Reed Smith knew of the allegations of those other cases. Under the standards of aiding and abetting or concert of action, there is simply nothing there to raise facts beyond a speculative level to support the cause of action, and respectfully, Judge Anderson was correct in dismissing that. The eighth count pleads the fraud against Reed Smith. I would note for the court that the basis for that fraud is allegedly sending these settlement agreements to representative parties and not disclosing the aspect of them being void ab initio. Windy City, the initial plaintiff in this case, the one that was represented at the time this mailing was sent, never accepted it. So Judge Anderson was absolutely correct in finding that in the absence of damage, they couldn't proceed with a cause of action, even if you assume that a cause could be founded upon Rule 4.2. Secondly, Midwest Inc. was not represented by counsel, so the 4.2 analysis simply just doesn't apply to those claims that were alleged by Midwest Inc. Moreover, we have cited to the court not only the model rules. Mr. Novoselsky has cited to the court the local rule in the Northern District about Rule 4.2 that makes clear in the comments that party-to-party communication is simply not prohibited, and even if it were prohibited, I would note to the court that the record shows that it was on May 27th these documents were sent to the client, Mr. Novoselsky's client, but 7 days later, on June 3rd, they were sent to Mr. Novoselsky. No injury they did not accept. Finally, Your Honor, as to the issue of the authority of the Attorney General, I would note that it's not pleaded in the revised second amended complaint that the Attorney General exceeded its authority. That was raised for the first time in the reply brief. I will rest on the arguments in our response to the motion to certify because I believe those questions have been adequately raised and addressed by the Illinois courts, and there is no reason nor basis to certify anything to the State of Illinois Supreme Court. And in finally, and in conclusion, with respect to the third amended complaint, the plaintiff's proposed third amended complaint says nothing more as it relates to Reed Smith than did the revised second amended complaint that was properly dismissed. So the third amended complaint adds nothing new, no new allegations of fact, no new allegations of law or legal theory, such that it would be appropriate for the case to be remanded to allow that third amended complaint to be filed against Reed Smith. If the court has no other questions, I will rest on the arguments in our briefs and in our response to the motion to certify the questions of state law. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Novoselsky?
No, please.
Well, then, thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.